Hello, and welcome to Because It Was On. We are like that fancy film podcast, but for people who like to talk about the episode of The Parkers, where Nikki's grandmother comes to town and immediately tries to get with her professor. We talk about the social politics and history of your favorite sitcoms with varying degrees of seriousness. My name is Zach, and my boss faked her own death this week to lure out the surviving members of a tontine she joined back in the 70s. But she blew her cover and left her place in the sniper's nest when she became upset at how few people showed up to her funeral. It really made her reflect on how she might need to think about considering the possibility of being marginally nicer to people.
And my name is Jessica, and I've met the love of my life, but he can never, ever find out that I became his dream girl by reading all of his spam mail and forming an entire persona around it.
Jesus, that's like just girlified you. The show you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's a lot of sitcom plots where just a little darker and it is you.
I mean, that's basically what we're always saying, is that sitcoms are just like one step away from horror.
Yeah, they've got a 1 or 2 degrees of reality filter on where you're not horror. But if it's, I feel like if it's only like spam mail, like if it's only junk mail, it feels less invasive.
Yeah.
Like I'm getting your junk mail, and I've created a persona around that based on the fact that you get a lot of Costco connections.
So. Man, he must have really good credit because he's getting pre-approved out the ass.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm going for.
So, Jessica, what are we talking about this week?
Zach, it has been a long time since we've done our one season wonders. For those who have been with us for quite some time, you might remember we covered a sitcom from the early 2000s starring John Goodman. Why can't I remember the name of the sitcom?
Normal Ohio.
Normal Ohio. How could I forget? How could I forget?
Because you actively tried.
Because I actively tried. It's still there, deep in the brain grapes.
But certainly take the sting off of having a gay son.
Yes, this is a type of episode we like to do from time to time, which is assess shows that seem to be cooking with all the right ingredients. All of the makings are there for a hit sitcom. But for one reason or another that we will unpack throughout the course of the show, the sitcoms just don't land. They don't work, and it is a flop-arena. And today we have a very interesting one, because if you were around from like 2012 to 2015, you might remember a hot new stand-up comedian who was on the scene. And this would have been a lanky little Catholic boy, one John Mulaney.
Yeah, John Mulaney never really left us. He's, I don't know, he's the easy choice for a Netflix night.
Yeah, oh no, I'm not to suggest he left us, but like he made a splash.
He did leave us for about 3 months for rehab.
This is true. This is true. But he made like a very big stir when his New in Town special came out in 2012. And it was, I feel like it was in that era of Netflix where Netflix had just become pretty ubiquitous very recently around the 2012-ish period. But it didn't have an insane amount of content, and they were paying a lot of stand-up comedians, and every once in a while they'd get a special where it felt like everyone, at least in my demographic, who at the time would have been like a 20-something white millennial, saw this special. Everyone at that point was talking about John Mulaney's special. And he became like the hot new stand-up comedian of the time, of 2012.
Yeah, very quotable comedian. I have, I'm good friends with three lawyers, and I suspect that this is true for a lot of people in the legal profession. This is a go-to phrase that Mulaney gave them as a gift to the profession. It's when he's doing an impression of the judge on Law & Order, where it'll be like, I'll allow it, but watch yourself. They love saying, but watch yourself.
You know, based on their profession, it really hits home. Makes them feel seen with people a little sass.
People love it, yeah. People love a profession-specific joke that they can just have.
Yeah, so he was the hotness. And I don't know if you remember, Zach, but I remember when the buzz came out that John Mulaney was going to have a sitcom. In 2014-ish, the word on the street was out. The trailer started to pop out everywhere. And it became news that Mulaney was going to get a sitcom. You and I, sitcom aficionados, I'm sure this percolated for us. I know certainly for me, I remember clocking, this will be interesting. And it wasn't 10 seconds later before everybody started calling it the next Seinfeld. Do you remember this?
Yeah. It had a lot to do, I think, with the special that made him so famous, New in Town. If you remember, the introduction to that was like a faux intro to a sitcom.
I do remember, because in preparation for this episode, I watched that special again.
Oh.
And indeed, it is like a little sitcom intro. And boy, would I have loved to watch that sitcom. New in town. John Mulaney's new in town. He's feeling mustard on his shirt and he's got some papers to deliver. But oh no, he's successful and he's got some really crazy friends. Whoa, new in town. John Mulaney's new in town. New in town is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah, that looks like a good sitcom. But in the public's mind, I think that John Mulaney, he was destined for a sitcom. Everyone was like, give this man a sitcom. Before New in Town, he was a writer on SNL. During, would you say it was a high point, 2009-2012, with John Mulaney?
I mean, SNL is interesting because people always look back on it and say that time was a high point. But I don't think as people are watching it, they think that a current SNL is a high point.
They're like presidents that way. It's
yeah, like, they're never appreciated properly during their administration.
Yeah, it's just because the filter of time, you forget all the bullshit.
You forget the bad sketches and you only remember.
Yeah, it's just a fun. You're so right about that, because I remember this was during a period where I tried a few times to get into SNL. And then I was like, I can't fucking do this. I'm going to sit around for all this time for one good sketch a night.
Yeah, it is one of those things where I personally would probably never think to watch SNL ever. But my husband is a big fan, so we watch SNL every week. So I've seen all SNLs for at least the last, 8 years or so. I'm well-versed in SNL. And, every once in a while, you get a real good sketch. How I would prefer to go about watching SNL is to let the internet filter it for me. And yeah, it will tell me what the funny sketch of the night was.
Yeah, TikTok nice? Will let you know if there was a funny one.
Yeah, it will do that job. It will do the filtering for me. So I actually don't need to. Don't have to.
Yeah. Really, that is the function of the pirating aspect of TikTok. Where just people are illegally uploading stuff. Is it like a mama bird chewing up pop culture and then spitting it up?
Yeah, they just hit it right down my throat.
Yeah.
Thanks, TikTok.
I really liked the I'm Bi Hypnotist sketch that they did recently.
Yes. That was really funny. That is the girl from The Bear, Ayo Edebiri, I think is her name.
She's also in Bottoms, which is really good.
Yes. And she was so good in hosting SNL. If you're ever like, I'd like to watch a recent episode completely. She was really good. Could have been offered just a cast slot right then and there. She's fucking slayed it. So good. Yeah, so in 2015, he had a sitcom that, or I think it actually aired in 2014. Like 2014
to 2015, yeah.
Yeah. So in the fall of 2014, it would have premiered. And I remember it coming out, the buzz around it coming out, and this is the next Seinfeld, and it's very Seinfeldian in the structure of the show, in that it is about, 30-somethings living in New York City, and one of them, John Mulaney, is a stand-up comic by profession, as is his roommate Motif, and it's just about his day-to-day life as a comedian. And the framing device of the show, much like Seinfeld, is John Mulaney's stand-up. a lot of the jokes in the show are lifted directly from that New in Town stand-up special.
Yeah, I fucking hate that. I mean, it's not really their fault. I understand that it's just like the industry practice to like as like a proof of concept when you're doing like a sitcom based off of like a sitcom based off of a stand-up comedian's career. You just throw the stand-up special that made him famous into the grinder, and then like you just make a little collage. Yeah. It's so annoying to watch.
It's super annoying. I agree with this. I do think it is something that probably was more palatable back in the day, where if you wanted to see somebody's stand-up special, you either had to have gone to it, seen them on tour, or had HBO. I feel like watching a stand-up special was way, way rarer in the Seinfeld era, or like when a lot of those television shows that were coming out based on stand-up personas were common. You might have known the comedian, seen them before, and understood that they were famous from The Tonight Show or other sort of late night circuits where they would have shown up. But the idea that you've seen their whole N10 stand-up special is probably relatively rare.
Yeah. If you don't know what we're talking about, I talked about it in the Cosby episode, where the pilot episode of The Cosby Show is just like little excuses to watch a skit form of Bill Cosby's stand-up, where like Vanessa is given a lot of the lines of his really annoying child that he talks about on his stand-up. Roseanne's in the pilot, I believe it's the pilot, little speech about her husband and how you have to make a good husband, and she has that like muffin speech where like you're picking off the raisins. That's a stand-up bit that she did, and it was just like transformed into, you know, a sitcom. And it's a normal thing to do. It's insufferable to watch if you're familiar with it because it's so clumsy. It's I'm glad that they step away from this after the pilot.
Do they?
I mean, it's not as egregious.
Do they?
I guess in the pilot it's egregious. It's because it's every line is like an excuse for John Mulaney to like be like, hey, here's a skit. And I was like, I would never be friends with this man because he's just doing bits.
Yeah, they also like time. He'll give his bits, like the joke line or punchline from the show or from the stand-up special, he'll give the lines also to like other characters. It just makes it feel like so jarring. But yeah, no, there's a ton of lines from the special. Maybe it's because I watched all of the show and then that special all within a 48-hour period. There's lines all throughout, like even later season episodes. That said, these all could have been shot in a very different order than when they aired. Who knows? But definitely the second to last episode had the canceling plans is as good as heroin.
Oh, yeah. So it's all throughout, but like the pilot is wall-to-wall.
Wall-to-wall. Yeah, so they definitely do a lot of that. And so I do remember when this show came out, and I remember I was living in Boston at the time, and I had made a mental note of checking it out. Okay, I'll check out Mulaney. I'll grab it on Hulu or whatever. And within a day or so of it airing, it was just universally panned by every entertainment blog, critical review of this show. Just nobody had a single nice thing to say about it, even a little bit. And so I said, okay, I guess I'll skip it until 10 years later. And we decided to do a podcast about it.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, baby. we're going to watch all of the sitcoms.
Yes. Yeah, we had to hop into the Wayback Machine on the internet, pretty literally, and find these episodes, and I watched all 13.
So you were excited for the Mulaney sitcom. Were you a big Mulaney head?
Enjoyed New in Town. I liked it. And am I a Mulaney head? Maybe. Am I more like a sitcom aficionado? If you haven't guessed it by now, I sure am. And the fact that it was being touted as the next Seinfeld, and the fact that Mulaney himself is a very self-proclaimed sitcom and television lover himself, I was like, okay, I think we could vibe with this. So I wouldn't call myself a Mulaney head. I haven't even seen his last special that came out. I know he's experienced a soft cancellation.
he's on probation.
He's we definitely are allowing
him
probation.
Back into the fold, but you know, we'll allow it, but watch yourself.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
The culture's response to him.
Definitely on strong probation. There is definitely a contingent on TikTok that would rather see him shot into space.
Yeah, I hated that whole saga with him, mostly because I really don't give a shit about celebrity stuff. You know, if they do something so bad that I'm not allowed to watch anymore, sure, let me know. But if unless they are like, dude, they are breaking crimes, they are ruining lives. I need to know. I hope
he ruined a life.
Yeah.
But I mean,
but you know what? I'm sure she did fine in the divorce. I hope. I don't know. I'm not.
I think she's internet famous, like in her own right as well. I think so. I think she's fine. Yeah. Look, famous men. I don't know if you guys know this. Let me make sure I let you guys in on a little secret here. Famous men, they often tend to cheat on their wives. It's a thing that happens. And turns out John Mulaney is not. He's nobody's hero.
What I think is interesting, so I did watch his most recent stand-up, and he talked extensively about his drug problem. He didn't touch with a 10-foot pole the infidelity of the baby. I understand the baby is a baby. That's a human being. You want to keep him for the public. But yeah, he didn't touch that infidelity shit.
I mean, I guess there's no real good way to go about it, right? Like, how would you even approach it? Because you got this new wife. So you can't make her upset, and you're not trying to like add insult to injury to the ex-wife unless you're just like a really a piece of shit. So yeah. Not a lot you can do with it. Leaning into your drug problems, probably a good path to go, because then you can just focus on maybe some reasons why you were such a piece of shit.
Yeah. Fill in the blanks, folks. So I was always fine with Mulaney's stand-up. I would watch it. If I was cleaning, I couldn't think of anything else, I'll put on a Mulaney.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll tell you, though, I fucking love the Sack Lunch Bunch. Have you seen it?
No, I don't know what that is.
It's, he did a special.
Oh, is that the Oh Hello?
I don't know. Although, I do also love Oh Hello. But the Sack Lunch Bunch is a special he did on Netflix, where it was like a parody or homage to like 1980s kids shows, like skit shows, kind of Sesame Street without the Muppets, where they had all these like child actors do these big Broadway musicals. And it's just like the whole vibe of it was that, I don't know, it had the John Mulaney sense. It's so good. Like,
Was it a stand-up special?
It wasn't a stand-up special. It was just like a one-off, as though this was like a real show he did.
No, I never watched it.
Every single song is a bop. I know that you love musicals, so I would just any single one. The Algebra song, amazing.
Cosmic comes in, said, I hear you know math. I'm as naked as a baby in a bath. He wrote a problem and I got scared. If B is 3, what is AX squared? I took the pencil from the man and I did my best. I drew a stick figure of a lady with breasts. He was not amused, threw me against the wall. And pulled his knife and rubble. But then the phone rang that was next to the bed. The husband picked it up and found that Prince's guy was dead. And then the commotion. A 12-5-9.
Yeah. I mean,
Do flowers exist at night? It's good.
I really enjoyed, like, after he came back to host SNL one time after he had left, and he put a skit in there that, like, he had gotten rejected every time as a writer, but it was just like two lobsters in a lobster tank reenacting Les Miserables. Pretty good.
Yeah, he loves sitcoms and he loves musicals. And as soon as you can, I know that this is like lowering the chances that you'll watch it, but I know for a fact you would love Sack Lunch Bunch.
I'm sure I would. I'm Mulaney'd out a little bit right now. Let's revisit that in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Let's just revisit that after I've washed the taste out of my mouth.
So they did this Reading Rainbow skit where they had this like little boy do this like review of a book, and it was like about a dad experimenting with drag. And so it's just like dad's new hobby. And
and even though Sasha was embarrassed, he couldn't deny they were right to throw shade. Sasha went outside to see his dad dragging a roller suitcase. "Dad, I didn't know you did drag," Sasha says. "Because you don't. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. Because, like a chubby queen in a corset, the truth always has a way of spilling out." The rest of the book is them updating his tired act. And even though his dad doesn't win the Astoria Glamour Drag Ball, it's still pages of fun. My one critique is that it focuses too much on the New York drag scene and not the West Coast and Southern houses. If you want to read a book that I give 5 out of 5 pencils, pick up Sasha's Dad Does Drag and The Act Needs Work at your local library.
Watch it. Strong recommend.
All right. We've now been like at least recording for 20 minutes and have
not...
So
much is going to get cut. We're at 5 minutes of
content. We have barely talked about this show at all. So Zachary, set the stage for me. What is Mulaney about? Who's in it? What are we doing? Give me a little bit of the rundown.
Yeah, so Mulaney is set up like Seinfeld, where they do these framing devices or like these intros where Mulaney will talk about a topic and then the show will be around that topic a little bit. So it's about the life of a stand-up comedian like Seinfeld. And he has 2 roommates. He has Jane and Motif. I'm not familiar with Motif's actor, but Jane is Nassim Pedrad.
Yeah, Nassim Pedrad, who was also an SNL alum. She left SNL to do Mulaney.
Yikes.
Oh. Yikes.
I hope there's a blood feud there. And I did not recognize this as a Motif. Not the roommate, as like a motif for the show until I was like researching it. And I guess it's true. But John Mulaney said that he wanted this show to be about a stand-up comedian that's trying to be a good person. Because originally it was going to be about that period in his life where he was trying to be sober and getting his life back together and trying to be a good person. And a lot of the episodes, most of the episodes have some kind of moral quandary for John. I don't know if that was executed that well, because I really did not pick up on it as a thing.
I mean, it really could have been Seinfeld meets My Name is Earl, but I think, and we'll talk about it, they just don't lean heavily enough into anything.
Yeah, that would be my critique, but put a pin in it.
Pin in it.
You have Oscar is the... He geographically occupies the position of Kramer. He's the neighbor across the hallway who's just like this aging hippie gay guy. It's funny, a sidebar on how they introduce Oscar is they do a mid-episode, we're back to the stand-up bit. And it's just like John Mulaney's stand-up bit about gay people and how he was, quote, gay as a little child. And then they cut to Oscar, and it was just, here's my gay friend.
Yep.
All right. Yeah,
he did his bit about how all little boys are gay, and then, yep.
Showed a grown-ass gay man.
Grown-ass gay man. So there you go. I liked Oscar. I thought he was fun. There's the last episode of the series actually puts Oscar and John Mulaney's boss, played by Martin Short, together. And that's a show.
That should have been the show.
I would have absolutely watched that. But that does introduce, I think, is that our last main character? Is Martin Short?
Oh, we can also mention that they have a Newman.
Do have a Newman.
Yeah, they have a Newman.
That they also do fucking nothing with.
Yeah, they did. Such a waste. Because the idea of having a modern Newman is a brilliant idea. And there's so many fun things you could have done with a modern Newman. But no, they just have Andre, who is
their drug dealer.
He's their drug dealer and just like annoying neighbor that shows up. they fucking hate.
Yep, that's pretty much it. And then you have Martin Short playing his boss,
Lou Cannon. Oh yeah, forgot about Martin Short.
Lou Cannon, who hosts some celebrity game show, Celebrity You Guessed It.
The bit is that nobody understands the rules to the show.
Yeah, they barely show you the game show, but when they do, it's always a different angle on it. Martin Short is his boss there. Lou Cannon, who's like this, I don't want to say washed up stand-up comedian, but like somebody who's like, he's a stand-up comedian who's now hosting like a daytime game show.
Yeah.
Bad gig.
He's got a terrible gig. He's got a little bit of a Norma Desmond to him. A little bit of a Norma Desmond.
Yeah. A little bit of a Norma Desmond. Yeah, exactly. It's like if Norma Desmond needed to fulfill the role of Jack Donaghy in a sitcom, you would get Lou Cannon. And so that rounds out our primary cast. You also have a couple of other people who come in and show up every once in a while. I think most notably is Fortune Feimster, who shows up as like a PA, like a production person on Celebrity You Guessed It.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah, she does. I love Fortune Feimster.
Yeah, I love her stand-up.
Of the show. And, Zach, before we dig in, let me ask you something. Sometimes the show comes along, it's one season, maybe two, and gone too soon. We just weren't ready for it as a culture, as a society.
Don't trust a bitch in Apartment 23.
Yeah, don't trust the bee in Apartment 23. We just, you know, it's gone too soon. R.I.P. And sometimes a show comes along for one season and it is bad and gets canceled. Before we move forward with Mulaney, I'm going to go ahead and ask you, which one is it?
I do not hate Mulaney. I think that most sitcom first seasons are rough. This was, I think, just slightly too much on the side of rough.
Versus there's something that could be here.
Yeah, so
too much rough, not enough diamond in the.
Yeah. There's stuff about it that works. Oscar is a great sitcom character.
He's a great sitcoms character. Lou could be good. Martin Short is squandered in this role.
He is. When we get to the punch up segment, where we're gonna Monday Night Quarterback this whole thing and see how we fix it, I have some ideas on how they could have fixed Lou. But you're right, he wasn't done right. They didn't commit enough to anything. It was too generic. What I think, it's very clear, I will say, that this was written by a sitcom lover. That shines through so much, the way that, like, they have a Newman, and then it's clear they loved Seinfeld, because they have that right across the hallway sort of thing, and they do a sitcom plot about trying to get a rent-controlled apartment, which is very sitcom-y, very Seinfeld-y as well. But I don't even think it's like a ripoff. I think that it's like an homage. I don't mind
it
at all.
It's definitely an homage. It's certainly an inspired by. And look, here's part of the problem with that. The fact that the show is so modeled after Seinfeld. And so much hype was built up around it, around, hey, we got this stand-up comedian. He's really rising through the ranks right now. He's a star. He's got an observational humor style, very akin to Seinfeld. We're going to put him in a show that looks and feels a lot like Seinfeld. That's a big fucking shoe to fill. And that's a lot of expectations that I think got put on this show that weighed it down. You are weighed down far too much by the framing device that they chose of it being his stand-up, which is far too similar to Seinfeld, by actively modeling the structure of the characters after Seinfeld in a lot of ways, I think really set up the audience expectation that we're going to get Seinfeld. And we didn't get Seinfeld. That's just, the writing is not that good. It just didn't hit in the same way that Seinfeld hit with, as you've said on this show before, like these O. Henry style plots that are like very delicately structured and intricately woven. This is simply not what we had. We had much more like generic and predictable sitcom plots, which I don't think are bad and which I think can work. And they worked for shows at the time. Like the number one sitcom when Mulaney began airing is The Big Bang Theory. Like, it doesn't get more, like, traditional three-camera sitcom than that. So there was still an audience for that. There was still a space for it. There was still something that could be done there. I do think it just fell, it, like, imploded under its own weight.
So there's another show that when it was being created and when, like, in its early start, invited the comparison with Seinfeld. And we're like, we're trying to do a Seinfeld with a twist. And that was It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. They did lots of interviews where they wanted you to see them as Seinfeld if they were all on crack, I think is the quote. And so it's not like it's a curse or anything to be compared to Seinfeld. You can definitely court that comparison. But the thing is that when the creators of It's Always Sunny invited that comparison, when you held those two shows together, it's very clear that there was an innovation that was happening. And there was like that it was worthwhile.
Yeah, like, it had its own identity, right?
Right, like
very
right.
much its own identity. And there's probably a lot of people who watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia that have never watched an episode of Seinfeld.
Absolutely.
And don't like, need to. It honestly speaks to a pretty different audience.
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely a show that was like inspired by, it's like in conversation, I think, with Seinfeld. And you definitely, yeah. I think your enjoyment of it is enhanced by being a fan of Seinfeld, but it 100% stands on its own. And yeah, but when you get to Mulaney is also courting this comparison. They have a similar main cast structure, and they're of course doing the stand-up thing, and they have, I think in like the second episode, they do the, it's when they do the rent controlled apartment, and the apartment with Elaine was such like an iconic plot line that it definitely is, again, just, hey, we're trying to do an homage to Seinfeld. But the thing is, like, what are you contributing to it? What are you doing with it? Because, you know, I can just go watch Seinfeld. are you doing any kind of innovation to it? And no, it's just like a worse version of Seinfeld where you don't have Larry David on the writing staff.
It's just a worse version of the same thing where the plots are not, they're just not as well written. And frankly, I got very few laughs watching the show. And part of that is because a lot of it is just like from the stand-up special, which I'd seen. So it's okay, I know these jokes. So they were just too few, I think.
Yeah, and it's odd because, again, John Mulaney is clearly a good writer.
Yeah.
He wrote for SNL. He wrote Sack Lunch Bunch. He wrote his comedy specials, of course. And so he has such a distinctive voice that I think that could so easily be put into a sitcom. I'm not sure what happened with this.
I agree. I think, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
I'm not sure what happened with this. Like, Seinfeld has a very Larry David / Seinfeld voice to it. You know what I mean? Not just the plots, but like when one-off characters will speak, there's like a very New York-y back and forth voice to it where like a piece of Seinfeld dialogue is so distinctly Seinfeld. And Mulaney has that voice. Mulaney has a distinctive voice that could very easily be put into the mouths of other characters. And it's not just like his Seinfeld that shows it. Like, you can tell like a Mulaney skit. Mulaney has like a style.
Yeah.
He's very fond of like 80s references, and he does have, as lots of people have done, like impressions of, he has like an old, a slightly archaic way of speaking, like a carnival barker, as he has described himself as.
So I agree completely with everything that you said, and really I got to thinking about the show and like what wasn't working about it. And I think where, and who knows how this happened in the writer's room, where we got lost a lot in my take on this is that there was, like, for some reason, an effort to try to write characters from, like, a different perspective that was not Mulaney's. And I feel like way too much effort and energy went into that. So, like, I feel like we don't see his perspective. I think the idea was, like, we're going to watch this show where John Mulaney is the main character, and we're going to do the sitcom thing where, like, the main character is the least interesting one, and we are going to populate and people the world with wacky characters from whom, like, we are actually driving the laughs forward with those other characters, and Mulaney's just playing off of them, or they're playing off of him, I should say, which a lot of shows use this framing device, and a lot of shows, I think, even stand up to sitcom transition. This is what happens, right? This is the Ray Romano approach to your stand-up going to, in the sitcom world. You just let everyone around you be the crazy, and you are relatively the straight man. You don't necessarily have to have a character. And so I think that this is where Mulaney as a show is going, but we don't have a perspective or anything to glob onto that tells us we're seeing the world through John Mulaney's eyes. And I think this is where we struggle. You watch 30 Rock and you're like, I'm seeing the world through Tina Fey's eyes. And even though she is the least interesting, perhaps, of all of the characters around her, and we heighten the crazy around her to make those characters funny, I still understand I'm seeing the world through her eyes. When I watch Mulaney, I do not feel like I am understanding these characters or seeing anything about them through Mulaney's eyes.
Yeah. If you think of it for, like, very successful stand-up comedian to sitcom transitions, like, if you look at Roseanne's stand-up persona, like, her content was all about being, like, the domestic goddess of being a housewife. And she would talk a lot about her family and her place in the world. It's like having, like, a theory of the world that was very easily packaged and then put into a sitcom. Bill Cosby was the same. He talked about his family a lot. And so it was a very smooth transition to turn it into a sitcom. Ray Romano, similar, talked a lot about an Italian family and that sort of thing. And so it was an easy slide in there. John Mulaney, and I don't mean this critically, his stand-up comedy is mostly just about himself. He doesn't have a lot of, like, John Mulaney characters.
Exactly. You know what I mean? That's why he struggled to write as characters. And the one episode of this show that I really liked, I was like, this could be the show. This is good. There is an episode, it's the second to last episode that aired, and it is a John episode. It is 100% from his perspective. It is sitcom silly, it's fun, and it's really good. And if you're going to, listeners, if you watch any of the episodes, just watch this one. So it was the second to last one. I can get the name of the episode. I probably should, just for the sake of being a good podcaster. But here's what happens in this episode. We get no context on how he's been, like, dating this woman, but he's dating this woman who has a kid. And he's, like, concerned he's not going to hit it off with this girl who has, or, like, the kid. But he meets her. She's a 13-year-old girl. And turns out that they both share a love for Gene Wilder and, like, Mel Brooks movies. And so he forms this, like, really strong relationship with this little girl because they share a love of these movies. And he ends up, like, trying to relive, like, some of the pains of his youth because he was going to do, with his friend, they were, for the talent show, they were going to do Putting on the Ritz from Young Frankenstein as, like, their talent show bit. And John ends up chickening out because all of the kids at school were laughing when the first guy went on, so they decided not to do it. So he's, I'm going to relive this. This little girl doesn't want to do the talent show bit that her mom wants her to do around being a dancer. She loves Gene Wilder. I love Gene Wilder. We're going to do Putting on the Ritz together. I'm going to go to this little girl's school and be in this talent show bit. And throughout him developing this relationship with this girl, there's, like, reference after reference. It's, like, a lot of, you can see his perspective, like you said, around the 80s references. They were everywhere in this episode. And at the end of the day, he goes to perform Putting on the Ritz with this little girl, and he chickens out again because the eighth grade girls are, like, too mean to him in the audience. And so he chickens out and won't go perform. Such a good episode.
It's Blazing Saddles.
You like Blazing Saddles? Gene Wilder's my favorite actor. Did you know another actor almost played Gene Wilder's part?
Really? Well, did you know Richard Pryor was supposed to play Cleveland Little's part?
Well, yeah, everyone knows that, but wow. You're way different than I imagined.
John, I have a huge favor to ask you. My boss needs me to work late the next 2 days. Is there any way you could walk Ruby from school to dance class?
This Ruby? Of course. Hey, Ruby, have you ever seen Spaceballs? It almost holds up.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Super solid, and it's the one episode where I'd say pretty much wall to wall, like we are getting the world from John Mulaney's perspective, and it was good. And I would say the rest of the episodes, there is not a clear enough, like, we are getting the world from John Mulaney's perspective. We are just getting, like, characters trying to say funny things here and there. But there's not a story, there's not a plot, there's not a perspective, there's not a theory, there's not an ideology on the way the world works that we're fitting this narrative into. It's just like characters trying to say funny things sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's where it fails. But that episode, legitimately good. Legitimately good. I'm going to get the name of it in case anybody wants to watch it. Ruby. Genuinely good.
Yeah. John Mulaney and kids, it's a good combination. I feel like if I were to, like, give him another sitcom, him being like a teacher might be a better way to go. Like a theater teacher.
A
middle school Glee.
A guidance counselor. Like, I could see him definitely doing like a guidance counselor thing. Yeah, I completely agree. One thing that happens in that episode is, like, obviously John's like forming this relationship with this 13-year-old girl. And so they do the iconic shot of sitting at the park bench and looking at the bridge, the famous bridge in New York City, the Woody Allen shot. And the little girl, who's like big into the same movies as John, it's just her, the two of them sitting on that park bench, and she's like, this is just like Woody Allen. And he's like, wait, what?
Yeah. Kids speaking in the voice of John Mulaney is just such a good recipe for comedy, which is 100% what Sack Lunch Bunch is. I'm just going to weirdly be plugging that this entire time, because I don't think enough people... It didn't make enough of a splash, is the thing. And if it did, we could have not gotten Mulaney, and we could have just gotten Sack Lunch Bunch as a series.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that. Look, we can pitch that. We can round out with some other pitches.
They had a guest star that was Richard Kind, and he was on this segment called Girl Talk. And so Richard Kind is like there in a completely 100% improvised conversation with these 12-year-old girls, and he's just, here's the thing about show business, you love each other now, but after the show is done, you're never going to talk to each other again. That's how it is. You're friends for the job. Richard Kind just giving some real unscripted, here's how life works in show business, kids.
I love Richard Kind. He also gets referenced in Mulaney. There's a point where John is trying to find essentially a play date for Martin Short. And he lists all the celebrities in New York, and he's like, Richard Kind can't do it because he's too busy pushing a shopping cart around.
Yeah, everyone has, like, just a handful of celebrities that, like, just weigh disproportionately heavily on their mind, and Richard Kind is definitely it for John Mulaney.
Love Richard Kind. Excellent, and I think John Mulaney's actually involved in it, come to think of it. Excellent in the documentary Now, Sondheim ripoff.
Yeah, he was also good in that. We haven't even talked about Oh Hello that much. The Oh Hello skits, also very good.
No job, and there's no children, and...
May I ask you a question? And I don't mean to be rude. Do you have f***ing memento disease? Because every 2 minutes, is there a job? Is there kids? There's no kids, there's no job. There's too much tuna. You're on a prank show.
Right.
Would you sign a release?
John Mulaney is not a bad television writer. I don't understand.
No, not at all. Again, I think the show is just like completely devoid of his perspective. It's devoid of his view on the world. And we are writing the show, and it feels like a vacuum of just empty TV sitcom space. And we have to create a Seinfeld replica. And that is your task, as opposed to, like, John Mulaney, create a show from your point of view. I really feel like this is where the show struggled. There are some other places, too, where I thought it struggled. And one of them you actually alluded to. This is clearly written by a sitcom lover. And I agree, because it was very quick to introduce you to every zany character. There were too many for that early on in the show. You had him, Nassim, like his roommate Jane, his roommate Motif, the wacky neighbor across the hall, and Martin Short, and Andre, and then like pop in and out characters like Fortune Feimster's character. For the first 3-4 episodes of a show, that's too much. I didn't get to know anyone, really.
There's another problem with it is like it has this weird pick a lane thing, because we've been talking about about it as Seinfeld, but it also has this non-Seinfeldian tumor on it, which is that he works for Martin Short. And so the show is
so
split between... Yeah, because Martin Short doesn't really know the roommates. And so...
Except he does. Eventually, just, I guess, if your friend is a production assistant, writer for a television show, you just become part of the celebrity social group. There's multiple times where that just happens throughout the course of the show. Jane, Nassim Pedrad's character, she becomes his personal trainer for an episode. And then when he's looking for that play date, he ends up putting them on a play date with Motif and Jane. It's just, that's how it happens. But that tumor should have been gone. Or it should have been like a one or the other situation.
Yeah, like the, instead of roommates, they also worked on the show.
30 Rock.
Yeah, this is true.
And I'm certain that's what they had to contend with.
They had to have Martin Short on there and...
But here's what I would have done. Why wouldn't you just make Oscar and Martin Short roommates across the hall? They're like the odd couple situation. They don't even have to be like romantic roommates, like a partnership, but they could be. That would be fun too. But they could also just be like roommates across the hall that are like literally just an odd couple situation.
Would he still be the host of the television show?
He could be. Or why not?
Yeah, and that could work. I guess so. Have we organically transitioned to how we would punch up this show?
I think the last thing I'll say on like how I didn't like the show is just Martin Short is so ill-used in this show. Martin Short's known for his essentially like stream of consciousness humor, where he pops in and out of characters, and he's got almost a frenetic take where he is just like an atom buzzing around the room, bouncing off every wall. And it's a very high energy take. It's a very like fun, positive energy to him always and whatever he does. And in this role, he felt so subdued, so underplayed, like a Xanaxed out version of Martin Short, that nobody wants to see that. And I just don't know why they used him in this way.
It's funny that you said that, Jessica, because one of my main takes... Okay, so in the pilot, they do the exact famous bit where John Mulaney goes to the doctor and because he wants to get a Xanax prescription, and then he ends up getting a prostate exam because he fudges it. And one of the things that I wrote down as like my notes is it feels like he got that Xanax and then everybody on the show started popping the Xanax because they're just so subdued. And like sometimes I feel like they're given like funny lines, and then very talented actors that I know that they are just like throw the line away, and it felt just like very rushed and subdued. Like I don't know if they were shooting at like 3 a.m. or what was going on, but it felt sleepy. It was a sleepy show.
Yeah, for as much coke as we know John Mulaney was doing, they all seem asleep. Like, why didn't you share?
There was a scene where John and Martin Short were in Martin Short's apartment, like his penthouse. And then they were doing like a scene where John was trying to get Martin Short's pants on him. And so it was like one of those classic sitcom scenes where like they're doing something compromised and then the girlfriend walks in. And it's really like, oh, no, this isn't what it looks like. That kind of thing. Very sitcom. And then they had a, what I thought was a very funny line where they actually acknowledged that it was stupid that she would walk into his penthouse.
Yeah.
Because he has the line, oh, and when you go down, fire the doorman, they'll let you in.
Thank you.
I say this all the time, but you're my favorite comedian.
That's sweet. That's very kind.
I love those jeans.
Oh, thank you.
I wonder what you look like out of them.
He looks like that because he's not in them. Hey, Kristen, you need to leave.
Yes, and tell the doorman who let you up that he's fired.
Which I thought it's just like a sunny, because you think it's like they're not aware that would be a weird thing, but then they subvert the expectations by acknowledging it. Yeah. But it's so rushed and it's given no energy at all that what I thought was a pretty funny line just gets like thrown in the garbage.
Yeah, exactly. They don't even know what lines to hit. It feels like where to cue the laugh track. It feels subdued. I don't think it's Martin Short's fault. Martin Short hit the joke fine. I think there's just something going on this show where just the energy felt sucked out of the room. And Martin Short does feel subdued. And I know he's an incredibly talented performer. I mean, I don't need to sit here and tell you all the things Martin Short's great in. He's phenomenal. It just is, I think he's underused, just not used well in this show. Some other things I thought that were weird about Mulaney. I spent a lot of time with it. Some other things that I thought was weird. One, I can't stand Jane's character. Just the worst type of pick-me-sha that exists out there. Just bitter, full of hatred for everything, especially anything that might be related to, you know, anything remotely feminine that women should like. Also a character who's, they do a whole bit that I don't think aged well in the last episode, where in order for her to say, for her to be happy and accepted, she has to reject everything about her Iranian culture. They reveal that her name isn't even Jane. Her name is Gagoosh. And if Gagoosh does not tame her hair and tweeze her eyebrows every 3 hours, she turns into a gremlin. And she reverted back to having a full-on Iranian accent.
This isn't my makeup bag. It's my old clarinet.
Okay, look. We're gonna get you a pillowcase for your head. It's okay.
No, John, no. You know, seeing this 1994 Kataro Advantage clarinet with a backup reed, I'm realizing I have spent years fighting who I really am. I even hid my accent. You know, I used to be unique. I used to be musical. I used to be Gagoosh. And guess what, boys? I want to be her again.
It wasn't great.
Not great.
Nor was
there,
it.
There were a few things that so did not age well. So this was written in, so this aired in 2014. They have an episode that I feel like if in 2014, like if you gave a challenge to the writer's room of, I want you to write a sitcom episode that is acceptable to air now, but the challenge is for it to age as poorly and quickly as possible. I feel like that's the challenge they gave when they did the episode that was essentially like Me Too, the prequel, where... The entire bit is that Martin Short just keeps sexually harassing contestants on his game show because he's so horny. And yep. There's a joke that Fortune tells where it's, yeah, we just need to hire. Yeah. So sometimes in show business, we'll just hire a hot, sexy bimbo and give her the title of production assistant so that, you know, the talent has somebody to fuck.
No, Lou and I do not have that kind of relationship yet, so I'm going to need another solution.
Sometimes on a show, we'll hire a girl and call her creative producer. It's a joke title for some skinny bitch the host has sex with.
That's my title. I'm the creative producer.
But Jesus Christ, has any joke ever aged as poorly as that? It was in 2014 that aired, and then like Me Too happened in 2016.
No, you're absolutely right that somehow a show that aired in 2014, which it's 10 years ago now, but also still somewhat reflective of current culture, just fell apart at the seams. And I just think there's so much to be said of like how poorly they wrote for women. I think Jane's character was written incredibly poorly. There are a lot of jokes for and about her and by her that don't age well. She has a whole plot line where she's essentially trying to seduce a cat because she can't get a boyfriend. So she's trying to get this cat to literally sleep with her, not sexually sleep with her, but they play it like the cat's like, it's all played romantically. She's having sex with the cat. And the whole bit is she's just such a like a gross loser. I think I don't like her character and I don't like how it was written. It's nothing against Nassim Pedrad. I think she's gorgeous. I think she's funny. I always enjoyed her on SNL. It's just not the character. It's not good. I'll kill her in the how to make things better.
Yeah. So the show was supposed to be like centered around the theme of John trying to be a better person. And Jane's character, I think, how she was conceived was probably that she was going to be the foil to that.
Yeah, because the devil on his shoulder.
Yeah, because she is consistently, like, make bad decisions, do incredibly evil things. Like, there's this guy that doesn't want to wear a condom. And so she's, okay, go into the room and I'll meet you there. And then she basically swats him. She like calls the cops and is like, there's a naked man in my room and I think he has a gun. and that's in isolation, that's a fun character of just, I am willing to ruin lives, like terrible character. You want to just transition to the punch ups and how we would improve the show?
There's all my things I struggled with around Mulaney. Let's do our punch ups. I love the way that you wrote this in our notes. I think you should share it with the world.
Yeah, I put in the notes because if you're self-aware, then you can't get in trouble for doing it. But how would we, two people who have never worked in show business, fix the show for one of the most respected television comedy writers of our time? So let's get to it. Let's help Mulaney out because he's struggling.
Go ahead.
For almost everything, I think it would be very easy to be just like, just scrap it and here's my pitch for Mulaney. Which I think is the correct choice, but to try to make minimal changes to what he wanted to do.
Let's say Mulaney got a season 2. So you can't redo the whole conceit. We got a season 2, but they said, look, gang, you got a season 2, even though your ratings were terrible, a commercial failure, and critically panned. You have a season 2 because we're betting on you, but you need to go retool. Now we're in the writer's room. Those are the directives. What do we do?
I mean, my notes for almost everything is more. I think that Jane, it could be fixed if you make her an outright sociopath. Because all of her funniest bits are when she is doing terrible shit. And so if she is supposed to be like the foil to John trying to be a good person, then make her fucking satanic. A life ruiner.
And please don't make her like whining to get a dick.
Yeah.
I can't stand that shit. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see another moment of that.
Yeah.
It cannot be her whining about trying to get it in.
Yeah.
I don't need any of that. I think somebody watched too much Sex in the City.
Yeah. He was like, fuck, we need a woman character. What do I do? And then he just watched Sex in the City.
Yeah. He just cribbed Sex in the City and tried to insert something like that.
Her first plot line, like where like she was heavily involved in the show, was just she was very emotionally invested in the fact that John was grossed out by childbirth. And so she's, I need to roll up my sleeves and I need to get involved in this. And so she was just like in the womb plot line.
Yeah.
And so we're not doing that anymore. She's a life ruiner.
Scrap it. She's a life ruiner. I don't want to see another even hint of a future will they, won't they with her and John. Cut it out.
Dating the mayor and then blackmailing him with dirty pics.
Yeah.
That's the shit she needs to be on.
And she does a couple of fun things throughout the series. Like there's that episode I mentioned where she's Martin Short's personal trainer. The only reason he hired her is because she came to a taping of the game show and didn't laugh at a single thing. And she realizes she could have a Martin Short sugar daddy situation here if she fake laughs at him. And so he keeps her around so she can fake laugh at him. So then we see her next in like a caftan in his apartment, like full like sugar baby moment. And all she has to do is like fake laugh at him every once in a while. Let's get more of that.
Yeah, she needs to be doing cons every episode.
Cons after con. That is her whole thing.
Absolutely. She needs to be iconic and memorable for her the cons and shit that she's constantly pulling. Because you want that Seinfeld juice. And Seinfeld did cons at the ass. I would also, more for Oscar, I feel like Oscar needs to just turn it up. It's too subdued. If you're doing a Seinfeld and you have an aging hippie, then he needs to be having like Burning Man every... He needs to have a Burning Man in his apartment.
Yeah, he needs... way too subdued. He's doing too much normal shit. He needs to be doing weirder shit in his apartment regularly. And look, I still don't hate the idea of putting Martin Short in that apartment with him.
That might be a season two twist. He has a late in life sexual awakening.
We just never say that he was ever Lou.
He was always there.
The talk show host. He was always there. Sitcoms pull that shit all the time.
Just gaslighting the fuck out of us.
Gaslight the audience that they were always an odd couple situation. John Mulaney never had a job at a television studio. What are you talking about?
So this one doesn't really fit with your framing that this is like us doing season two. But one way that I thought that they could have fixed it, if I got in there early enough, is get rid of the Lou Grant thing. And Martin Short is playing himself as like an
also
aging...
Also hilarious!
Yeah, an aging comedy.
That would be great. He's just literally punching up bits for the actual Martin Short.
Yeah. And so Martin Short is playing himself as an aging comedy actor that is now on like daytime television. That's funny.
And you get rid of the Lou Grant thing. You get rid of Martin Short trying to be like this Jack Donaghy-esque character. And Martin Short's Tracy Jordan. Like you have that level of just like off the walls craziness. And John is the Tina Fey of the situation attempting to wrangle him.
Yeah. He turned the Norma Desmond dial all the way up to 11. Not enough Norma Desmond in the character.
There's not nearly enough Norma Desmond. We're leaning way too hard into the Jack Donaghy. We don't need it. It's not what anybody hires Martin Short for.
There needs to be like a 3 a.m. phone call, like opener, like cold open, where he's calling, screaming, like crying, and he asks John, do I have cankles? That's the energy we need to be on.
Yes.
Everything is just too low. Turn all dials up.
And there's like these whispers of it in the show that you see where like this could be the way to go. There's a point where like their apartment's getting fumigated. So everybody is staying over at Martin Short's and Nassim Pedrad's hair keeps like getting crazy. And Martin Short ends up helping her with it. And she's like, you have an insane amount of women's hair care products. And he's, honey, famous men are women.
What else would I do? Well, what else would you do? Any other punch ups?
Yeah, honestly, if I would have so much less of John at work, and he is just working for Martin Short, and that's just a character who calls him. And occasionally we see popping in.
We reveal in season 5 that the show got canceled like 3 years ago.
Yes. And then, look, we got to figure out what we're doing with Motif. He has to, I don't want to cut him. Yeah. And then, the last thing we have yet to fix is Motif.
Motif. So if I think how I would structure most episodes is that because again it's always about like John's moral development and wanting to do the right thing, and I think that a good maybe comedic premise for the show would be that John has like a very neurotic and like sometimes vain idea of performing morality. And that's what he tries to do. Like when he was like, oh, I really want the approval of this airplane. So I want to go. And so I want to go and volunteer my first class seat to this Marine to get these people's approval. And so that's always his motivation. But Motif is just naturally a good person.
His Kenneth.
Yeah. So yeah, Kenneth is just, Motif is just pure-hearted naturally. He didn't get up out of bed to be a good person. He's just a good person, as opposed to John's very neurotic, I want to be seen as a good person. I think that would be an interesting sort of play to have.
The funniest plot they give Motif is when he's never heard of Friends. He learns all of Friends over the course of the episode. This is funny. They could keep doing this with Motif, where there are things he just doesn't know that is just white people bullshit that, they teach Motif.
Yeah.
Which I think it could be interesting. They do, a Sex and the City knockoff episode where then Motif, somebody's like, Motif, you're, living, Sex and the City right now. And Motif is like, what? What is that? Yeah, it's funny. You could keep Motif, naive about some things.
Motif just gradually becomes a basic bitch.
Yes. Yeah, in that Sex and the City episode, it's revealed that, all of his closest friends for that minute are just, a bunch of, middle-aged white women.
Yeah.
Because he's Sex and the City-ing at that point in time.
That's Motif's arc. Yeah, for sure. Just the pumpkin spice latte-ing of Motif.
Yes. Yeah. We got a show. I do think we would need to do more Mulaney-focused plots. And, I think specifically one of the things that they were trying to do with the show initially was not, just Mulaney trying to be a better person, but also Mulaney, getting sober. And, you are dealing with sobriety and, the recovery process. So he's just basically, Sam Malone without the bar. And I also think that we should add that right back in.
Yeah, it really does lose something as far as, why he wants to be a good person.
Yeah, there's just no humanity to it at all. Which, I think they try to pull that from Seinfeld, where it's no hugging, no learning, no lessons. I think they were trying to do, while at the same time the show's about him being a better person. But I think what it lacks is, the thing about Seinfeld is, sure, there's no hugging, no learning, no lessons, but Seinfeld is to the brim with humanity.
Yeah, these just the dark aspects.
Characters. They're very human. Nobody in Mulaney felt human.
They can't even do a conversation like normal people. They're just like, mustard. That reminds me of the time that I got mustard on my shirt in third grade. All right. Just random inserts of stand-up bits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we would also hire some additional writers.
Yeah, we'd really clean house.
Yes, because I think John Mulaney wrote most of the episodes.
Oh, did he? John, you're fired. We'll do better.
Let's see. I'm sure we could look up who the writers were.
I'm going to be so pissed if it's someone other than John wrote all of these, and that would... No,
he definitely wrote a lot of them. Let's see. Man, there were 17 episodes made, but only 13 of them ever aired. Let's see. I'm going to look at who wrote my favorite episode. Yeah, John Mulaney and Marika Sawyer. So they did have a female writer, and she wrote for What We Do in the Shadows. And she wrote for Sack Lunch Bunch.
Okay. I don't know why the writing is so bad on this.
It's inexplicable. It's inexplicable.
Oh, one controversial take is, I don't dislike Nassim either. I don't know if she is right for the character that's supposed to be an evil foil for John. And so I'm thinking it would be funny if Natasha Leggero was the replacement for season two. She's significantly older.
Natasha Leggero does actually show up in the show in the last episode that aired.
Oh, does she? What's she do?
She plays Motif's on again, off again, crazy girlfriend. And she actually does a funny scene where they all end up at Martin Short's house because their place is being fumigated. Motif calls this girl over, and then they're playing Truth or Dare, and Motif, because he cannot tell a lie, admits during Truth or Dare that she's not the love of his life. And so then she starts breaking up with him, and she's like, fine, I'm fucking leaving. And you know what? Half of the shit in this place is mine. This award, this is mine. This poster, this is mine. And then they're just in Martin Short's house. So she does a great job. But I get what you're saying, that Nassim Pedrad's not pulling off the chaos.
She's so amiable, and I don't know. She's a very bright actress. I don't know, like a sunny actress. And I don't know if she does the sort of dark, like my vision for this character needs to go darker. And I don't know if that's in the scene's range.
Look, I get it. Yeah. I hear you. I'm also cutting like most of the scenes at the show itself, which means goodbye, Fortune Feimster. Love her.
But yeah, goodbye. She, I don't know, Fortune might not be that great of an actress.
She's not, but my button for the show was which sitcom star would you give their own sitcom right now, today, and what would it be?
Yeah, okay, let's pitch. Star,
which stand-up out there in the wild today would you give their own sitcom, and what would the pitch be? And my pitch is actually for Fortune Feimster, but it is like a Fortune Feimster is basically doing mostly voiceover narration and maybe like popping in once or twice to be like, and like talking about it. But it's about her like life as a kid growing up as basically like a butch child in the South.
My Life is Louie style thing.
Yeah, very similar to My Life is Louie, or very, very everybody much like Fresh Off the Chris. Boat. Everybody Hates Chris. Very much like that. Young Sheldon, even, where she's just doing the voiceover piece and it's still her perspective. She's obviously involved in the writing and the creation. And you could maybe even do it where instead of voiceover, they do a freeze frame and she comes in to the scene and talks about it from her perspective and then snaps back and the scene keeps going. But I definitely think it's like Baby Fortune Feimster is like the vibe of the show. And she's mostly just doing voiceover and narration. Because, like, all of her best anecdotes about growing up are, like, her growing up as, like, a very butch little girl in the South. And I think it would work.
Yeah. God, that sounds so good. Like a
It young, sounds great, right?
A young Sheldon, but...
But, like, a just a butch little girl.
Yep, yep.
Fortune! Fortune, yep. Make it!
This is tough. Part of me, like, my gut goes to... Julio Torres, he has a new show out right now, so he's currently working, but we don't know how that's going to work out. He's doing a show with Tilda Swinton right now, so he's living the dream as far as a gay man.
That actually works. That I see that pairing perfectly.
Yeah, it's a perfect pairing. I really need to check it out. I just saw a clip on Netflix. But for sitcom, Julio Torres, I think that we're taking like an 80s like family movie approach to it. And I think that he is going to be like a fairy godmother, like on training, but it's like a workplace sort of a sitcom is my pitch for him. If you've ever seen Julio Torres's stand up, it's very surreal and odd. Like his stand up, he was sitting down.
I saw
for most
My Favorite
of it.
Shapes.
Yeah. My Favorite Shapes. So
I forgot to tell you, I watched that on an airplane recently.
Oh, on my recommendation?
You recommend it? I don't know if you recommended it, but I knew, like, I was on the airplane and I was like, Zach fucking loves Julio Torres. I am on an airplane. I am completely captive. Let's see what's up. And it was good.
You should watch Sack Lunch Bunch for your next airplane adventure.
If it is on the airplane, I will watch it. Okay. It was just on the screen. Like,
I gotcha. Yeah.
I would gladly do that if Sack Lunch Bunch were there. But that's Julio Torres... As a workplace comedy works. I mean, that is kind of Los Espookies.
It is,
yeah. It is a workplace comedy.
It would be like Martin Short had that 90s family movie where he was a fairy godmother in training. Just that. Yeah. And where he's going, he's trying to grant wishes. He's trying to look out for kids. He's looking out for other wells for boys. And like boys. He's watching them. He's looking out for them. Protecting them from bullies and stuff. I think it could be good. I think it could be nice.
Love it.
Yeah. All right, folks. All right. I hope you've enjoyed this very special episode of Because It Was On. You know, watch yourself.
But I'll allow it.
Yeah, be sure to follow us on Threads.
Yes. On TikTok. Instagram, Threads. We also have a Patreon. Such a fun thing to get a Patreon subscriber. And we want to thank all our Patreon subscribers for doing that and giving us a little sugar once a month. We love you. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. Thank you for learning. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for growing. That's it. Goodbye.
Because it was on, rate, review, and subscribe to Because It Was On. Whoop, 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 whoop.